This is I Choose Life News and Views, sponsored by Indiana Right to Life and Allen County Right to Life, committed to defending innocent human life for all people of all ages. Your hosts are Kathy Humbarger, Abigail Eschelbach, and Scott Kump.
Welcome to I Choose Life News and Views. I'm Kathy Humbarger.
I'm Abigail Eschelbach.
And I'm Scott Kump. I Choose Life News and Views is a joint project of Allen County Right to Life, Indiana Right to Life, and Bot Radio Network in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
Those of you who follow pro-life news, especially in the state of Indiana, may be aware of the lawsuit that quickly followed the governor's signing of House Bill 1337, which was really an omnibus life bill that we passed in the state legislature this year. It not only provided for the humane and respectful disposal of the babies' bodies that are victims of abortion, but also had a provision that would protect the unborn against discrimination, the same as those that are born. As we expected, a lawsuit followed, and our special guest today is Dr. David Prentice, our go-to guy for all things bioethical, which is what we're going to be talking about to some degree today. Dr. Prentice, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Kathy.
I would remind our listeners that Dr. Prentice is the Vice President and Research Director of the Charlotte Lozier Institute, a research organization that looks into all sorts of pro-life issues. Dr. Prentice also passed our vetting process by virtue of the fact that he hails from Indiana. So I know you're not living in the state now, Dr. Prentice, but you are well respected here, and we're so glad to have you with us.
Well, thank you so much. It's always a pleasure to get back to Indiana or to speak to a Hoosier.
Well, we have some common sense left here, so
<laughs> That's right. We'll
see if we can help our listeners understand a little bit about what's going on with the court action against House Bill 1337. This is really a landmark piece of legislation because eventually this could end up with anti-discrimination laws being at loggerheads with abortion laws in the courts. Is that a fair assessment, Dr. Prentice?
I think that's a great way to summarize this, that, you know, there really is a discriminatory action taking place when you kill somebody, even if they're in the womb. This was a landmark piece of legislation, as you said, hit a number of different areas, but one of the most important being this idea that, yeah, you shouldn't be discriminating against anybody, but that also includes unborn human beings.
We were not at all surprised that before the ink was dry on the bill that pro-life Governor Mike Pence signed, we immediately saw the ACLU and Planned Parenthood file suit. We saw headlines like Planned Parenthood sues to stop abortion law, the ACLU of Indiana and Planned Parenthood challenge the anti-abortion measure. We anticipated that, but then the next headlines a couple of days later was Indiana University challenges part of the new abortion restrictions law. The judge blocks Indiana University's attempt to join the ACLU abortion law, and other headlines indicating that Indiana University but by their own admission, has an interest in making certain that the body parts of aborted babies are still available to them to do research. Did this surprise you, Dr. Prentice, that they were so open about letting everyone know that this kind of research is going on here in Indiana?
Well, in a sense, Kathy, I wasn't surprised, because what you found is, whether it's a bill that's already been signed into law, and thank you again to Governor Pence for doing that, or even just legislatures considering these bills that would stop this abuse of science in terms of the use of fetal tissue, some of the first complaints come from research universities. And it's very misplaced types of claims, and I know we'll get into this a little bit more, but the idea that this is critical research, life-saving research, and so on, that requires fetal tissue from aborted babies to further the research. So, you know, again, I'm not real surprised that they came out and said this, but they're really just trying to protect their own financial interests in a way.
Well, I understand that the research is focused on Alzheimer's and autism, I believe. There's probably other research going on. This is research that's conducted at the Stark Neurosciences Research Institute in Indianapolis, which is connected with Indiana University. Current Indiana law allows that the purchase or sale of a fetus for adult or fetal stem cell research is okay. However, this new law passed this year and signed by the governor makes it a felony to buy, sell, or transfer the tissue, organs, or any other part of an aborted fetus. This is the claim in the lawsuit, and it is, I think, a fair interpretation of the restrictions that the law puts on it. So what do we say to those who say, but look at my mother, and I could say this because my mother was an Alzheimer's victim, and look at my child who is suffering from autism. These children are going to be aborted anyway. What do you mean by limiting research, something good that can come out of an abortion procedure? How do we answer that, Dr. Prentice?
Well, there's basically a false claim being made, first off, and that is that fetal tissue from abortion is necessary for the research, the only way that you're going to accomplish this research, and that it will lead to something successful in terms of a treatment or a cure. That's simply a false claim. In fact, you can just look back in history in terms of aborted fetal tissue and many of the claims that have been made over time, including recently, like this from these IU professors, and they're simply false. One of the things that we've heard in the current debate is that fetal tissue has saved millions and millions of lives because vaccines were made using aborted fetal tissue. What they're not telling you is that the fresh aborted fetal tissue, no vaccines have ever been manufactured using that fresh aborted fetal tissue.
Wow.
So to say that you still need it to make vaccines now is obviously false because it was never used. There are some cell lines that were derived back in the 1960s and 70s from one or two abortions. And there's an ethical problem with those, yes. But to say that fetal tissue and fetal organs, and including recently aborted babies and their tissues, are necessary is simply false. But as we've seen in other ethical debates about stem cells, the embryonic versus the adult stem cell debate, they will make these claims that this is the only way to do this research and the only way to achieve success and cures. And as soon as somebody is faced with that, well, oh, maybe we should let them do that because if we're going to get a cure for, and just reel off a list of diseases, you're going to hit somebody. Eventually, you'll hit everybody if you list a number of those things, as mm-hmm. you said. None of us are untouched by this, whether it's ourselves or a loved one or a friend. But again, all the claims are simply false. Fetal tissue does not lead to cures.
We're not denying the fact that these diseases are tragic, and certainly we have to struggle with dealing with these diseases. But again, the bottom line is that this kind of research is not necessary in order to address those diseases. And we need to come to grips with the fact that even if they did answer every medical problem that has ever been presented to humankind, there is still a right and wrong. And making women feel better about their decision to kill their child in order to contribute to research and a potential cure is just plain wrong.
It is. And there, you're right. There are two different aspects to this. One is the pragmatic, which we've already been discussing in terms of whether you really are going to get any success or not. And there are a number of alternatives instead of aborted fetal tissue that can be used, whether those are adult stem cells. There's another type of stem cell called induced pluripotent that you can make from skin, even from patients, and they can use to steady the disease and potentially come up with some sort of treatment.
And umbilical cord blood is very commonly attained and full of these kinds of stem cells. It's been my understanding.
That's right. I mean, it's a very rich source of very potent stem cells, not embryonic. They're more like an adult stem cell. But you think about all of the advantages They've already used umbilical cord blood stem cells, for example, to treat and cure, yes, I use the C word, sickle cell anemia.
Wow.
They've used it for all sorts of leukemias and other types of anemias, and they're starting to use it for additional conditions. There are dozens of conditions. And, you know, if you look at it, whether it's aborted fetal tissue or embryonic stem cells, at this point have not helped any patients or induced any cures versus adult stem cells, where there are documented records showing over 1.5 million treatments with adult stem cells.
Wow.
But, you know, the other aspect is important, too, the ethical issue that even if you could get all of these cures, which they are making these claims and false hopes for, you still would have to say, no, it's not right for us to kill some human beings for the potential treatment of other human beings.
That's, I think, a very clear statement that we all need to understand and accept that there still is a right and wrong. The lawsuit that we're talking about that's going on here in Indiana, Dr. Prentice, focuses on two specific diseases, Alzheimer's and autism. Do you know of any research that's being done with adult stem cells or other sources to address these specific diseases? Because that's where the battle lines are going to be drawn here in Indiana.
Right. And there are already research studies going on, not ready for going into the clinic, but showing great promise of success. And again, this is with adult stem cells, umbilical cord blood stem cells, and then this iPS kind of cell that you can make just from skin or almost any tissue. And so there are studies going on using these ethically derived alternatives. And again, they're much more likely to lead to success in terms of a treatment or a cure rather than aborted fetal tissue.
Well, let's not forget to explore a bit the old adage, follow the money. I understand that a lot of this university research is funded with taxpayer dollars. Is it true that some of the more successful adult stem cell research is being funded privately because it shows more promise?
There were definitely cases in the past. Now, finally, some of the taxpayer-funded research from the federal government or even from states is starting to catch up. But there are still a number of cases where the adult stem cell research, people saw that this was where the real success was going to come from. And you're right, that whole thing about follow the money, the investors want a return on their money.
Right.
They don't want to just be throwing their money down this hole with fetal tissue or embryonic stem cells, and so they were already putting their money towards the adult stem cells. And the last time I checked, there are over 3,000 clinical trials being done with adult stem cells. There are, as I said, over 1.5 million patients that have already been treated with adult stem cells. And not only is this the wave of the future, it's already making good in terms of some of those promises. So all the success, again, with patients is with adult stem cells.
This is Kathy Humbarger. You're listening to I Choose Life News and Views. Our guest is Dr. David Prentice, Vice President and Research Director for the Charlotte Lozier Institute. We're talking about the fallout from the passage of House Bill 1337, which protects babies that are unborn from discrimination, provides for the respectful disposal of the bodies of aborted babies. And we're drilling down a bit on the Indiana University lawsuit challenging this law based on the fact that it's going to infringe on, I think, their First Amendment rights for intellectual discovery or something along those lines. Dr. Prentice, does that sound familiar to you?
It does. I think it's pretty much a stretch. It's a very big stretch, frankly. But they were trying to say that if you don't let them continue their research with aborted fetal tissue, they won't come up with cures. They won't be able to hire even faculty and research personnel. They won't be able to make all of these wonderful discoveries that they hope, because they aren't there, but they hope that they're going to be able to do. But it really does come back again to the money. They have a few taxpayer funded grants that they want to continue, but they want to do it their way too. There's almost a picture you get in your mind of the little 5-year-old kid that says, no, I want to do it my way, and stamping their feet. And this is kind of the view I get here, because it's not only just a pragmatic question of what might work better, but it's a matter of, don't you really want to succeed?
Right.
And, you know, ignoring these ethically derived alternatives, with which there are many, just actually puts themselves at a disadvantage.
Well, I stumbled on the term that they use in their complaint. It's called the right to academic freedom. They also maintain that the law impedes interstate commerce, which I'm kind of trying to figure out what that means. I know that the contents of the lawsuit indicates that their fetal tissue comes from the University of Washington. So obviously there is some transport across state lines. So maybe that's what they're referring to. But bringing the University of Washington into the discussion, Dr. Prentice, I think helps us connect the dots. Last summer, we were all appalled by the several videos that were released by the Center for Medical Progress showing the front end of this procedure, the negotiations that go on with the abortion facilities and the people in the biotech industry to purchase aborted babies' body parts. And then it's my understanding that there are hubs where these aborted babies' bodies go, like the University of Washington, that are taxpayer funded, that kind of sorts the tissue out and then fills the orders from research universities across the country. Is that an oversimplistic explanation?
No, I think that's a good explanation. They were set up, frankly, a couple of decades ago when the scientific community was enamored of aborted fetal tissue and thought this was where all of these cures would come from. No cures came from it. In fact, there are a couple of trials that they tried on Parkinson's patients, for example, made the patients worse. And so you don't hear too much at all about those transplants anymore, but they're still disseminating some of this. And let's call them what they really are. They're sort of a middleman.
Right.
They're a manufacturer, a processor, a pusher, if you will, for aborted fetal tissue. So what's going on? Well, the clinics are getting some money, and I think it's becoming clear that they are profiting from this fetal tissue that they are then passing on to these middlemen. And there are some that are federally funded, you know, based on this old idea, frankly. And in my mind, those should just go away and shouldn't be funded anymore. There are some private concerns as well. You probably have heard about the STEM Express or the ABR group that are profiting again from processing and passing on and selling the fetal tissue. But, you know, again, this comes back to, is this the kind of nation we want to be, where we are actually, at least some people, profiting on death, profiting on parting out the hearts, the lungs, the brains of aborted babies? That's what's really going on here. And we need to think very hard about, you know, that aspect of it. Is this the kind of culture we want to have in this nation?
So I would encourage our listeners here in Indiana, when you hear all the claims about how this is going to help Alzheimer's patients, children with autism, all the other claims, and even if the other side has victims of these diseases telling stories about their hardships, etc., remember that there are other better ways to research cures for these admittedly awful diseases. But also don't forget the horror that you had in your hearts and minds when you saw those videos last summer. The one that is seared in my mind is the little baby, maybe somewhere between 16 and 20 weeks gestational age, and the tech was cutting open the baby's face with a scissors to remove an intact brain. We don't have any idea what that particular child's brain was used for, but let's not forget that our horror at seeing those little babies being treated in that way. And there are some claims that the babies were not even dead yet. And we know that these babies underwent horrific pain because they cannot be killed with digoxin, which is the typical way for ending the life of an unborn child in the later stages of pregnancy, which kills the baby before the baby is removed from the mother's womb. Digoxin cannot be used because that drug makes the baby's body parts unusable for research. So remember those pictures in your mind of those little babies laying on the counter in the abortion facilities and their body parts being harvested, and they end up in university laboratories for experiments like the one at Indiana University. And it may be all well and good to talk about the human aspect of the victims, and we don't want to diminish that at all. But let's not forget the horror of where the tissue comes from and how that all happens. These are not two separate issues. If we're horrified by what we saw last summer, we need to remember that when we hear the arguments for compassion and charity to victims of diseases that we're attempting to treat. Number one, again, I'm going to say it, there are other ways to address the research. And number two, and equally important, is the horror of where that tissue comes from in the very beginning.
And it's hard to have watched those videos and have those images in your brain, but people need to have their stomachs churned, need to remember those issues, because mm-hmm. you need to stand firm that this should not be happening.
Right.
We should not be parting out hearts and lungs and livers and brains of unborn children.
Not only should it not be happening, but there's no need for it to happen. If you walk away from this radio program with anything, please remember that. Many of our listeners I know have heard about the Zika virus that's transmitted by mosquitoes and the effects that virus could have on developing babies, unborn babies. Help us understand what this is all about.
Right. And it's, again, a very sad situation that this virus, which is similar to some other kinds of viruses that you usually find in the tropics, has taken an ugly turn here, so that women who are pregnant and infected with this Zika virus, now a lot of times if you get that infection, you're bit with one of those mosquitoes, only about 1 out of 5 people even show any symptoms. So if you're an adult, it probably won't be too bad. But what they are finding out is that some of those infected babies then still in the womb can have a condition called microcephaly. It basically means small brain. And your listeners might have even seen some of these pictures where these babies, their skull is just smaller. Now, we still don't really know all that's going on with that Zika infection and why it's causing this with these little unborn babies and so on. Interestingly enough, reflecting on our discussion we just had about fetal tissue, again, people have been saying that, well, we've got to have aborted fetal tissue so that you can study this disease. Well, it turns out you don't need it there either, because they can use these iPS stem cells made from skin, or they can use adult or umbilical cord blood stem cells. There have been about a dozen papers published over the last 2 months where they're starting to figure out how the virus works on brain tissue, but they're not using fetal brain tissue. They're using these stem cells, adult stem cells and iPS cells, and they can make what are called mini brains or organoids in the dish and study that. So they're figuring that out again without fetal tissue. The other aspect of this, though, is that there have been calls, again, from the pro-abortion crowd that, well, these babies ought to just be aborted. Well, my phrase is you should be killing mosquitoes, not unborn babies.
Very well said. So
unpack that. These are children and mothers that we need to have compassion for and help them through this, but we shouldn't be killing the patients. We
right.
should be treating them.
Tell us a little bit more about this condition that these children could be born with. Is that a lethal fetal anomaly?
It is not usually lethal. There have been a few cases, and again, they don't really have enough information to know for sure. But in the vast majority of cases where they have seen this, it's not a fatal condition. The children are born, and it's sometimes very apparent, sometimes not so apparent, with just smaller skulls, in some cases, smaller brains. It could lead to some severe complications later on in this child's life, but it might not. In fact, it was interesting that soon after some of these reports started coming out and there was such fear about microcephaly, there was a blog post, a news article by this young lady who had microcephaly. She had just graduated with honors from the university. She was fine. She had what looked like the smaller skull and so on, but obviously it hadn't affected her life. She had succeeded, and she was very upset that people were taking this attitude that, well, we should just abort these children. No, she said, you know, look at me. I'm an example, and I wouldn't want to have been aborted. I'm succeeding. I'm a valid human life that should be saved.
This seems like another example, Dr. Prentice, of the pro-abortion advocates taking anything they can, any problem that might face us, and immediately looking to death as the answer. I've seen this over and over again, and this sounds like another verse to the same tune.
Yeah, and, you know, again, most adults even that have this infection don't have too severe a problem, but there are a few cases of a neurological condition called Guillain-Barré syndrome, but it's a condition that can cause some paralysis, can cause some other neurological conditions. Well, they're not recommending that we kill those patients.
Right. Yet, we should say.
Well, yeah. But we should be defending their lives. We should be defending the lives of these unborn children as well. And you don't kill the patient to cure the disease.
Exactly. Well, thank you so much for your time today, Dr. Prentice. As always, you have shone a light on some complicated issues. There is so much more I'd like to talk with you about, so we'll have to schedule a time for you to come back and talk with us again on I Choose Life News and Views. Again, thank you so much for your time and knowledge, and we'll plan to talk to you again real soon.
Thank you, Kathy.
The Life Defenders Boot Camp, hosted by Allen County Right to Life, is June 24th and 25th this year. High school and college students have the opportunity to learn pro-life apologetics from some of the nation's top trainers, including Scott Klusendorf. This overnight program is only $25 and includes a t-shirt, housing, food, and class materials. Learn how to debate with pro-abortion advocates using arguments based in logic and embryology. Information and registration at ichooselife.org or call 260-471-1849.
You've been listening to I Choose Life News and Views. If you have questions about this program or if you'd like to support the fight for life, please call 260-471-1849 or go to ichooselife.org, because without the right to life, no other rights matter.